Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda.
And this is Sam.
And we are back for a quick little episode answering your questions about suicide.
Easy, light, breezy, fun. That's what we do here.
All right. So we are going to get into it. So Sam, I'm going to read one. Let's do it. Okay. I've struggled with chronic suicidal ideation for years. I'm not in immediate danger, but these thoughts are kind of like background noise in my life. Most suicide resources seem focused on acute crises, but what about those of us living with the thoughts long term? How do we build lives worth living when these thoughts are persistent?
I think this is a lot more common than people want to say.
I agree.
And I think maybe even people not realizing that is what they're struggling with, like the passive suicidality, perseveration on that and kind of feeling like it's always there. I think people assume that that's like just an element of depression sometimes when it's actually a little bit different. I would say, first of all, to normalize, I think I said this in the main episode where my professor, Dr. Dave Derizotis, had said, anybody who's saying they've never thought about dying is lying, right? Like it's everybody has it. And so I think to normalize, if this is something that you used to really struggle with heavily, I think it makes sense that sometimes, and I think this goes for anything as well, those thoughts still exist. Yeah. And at one point, those thoughts were a coping skill for you in some way, maladaptive coping skill, not a great one that we want to maintain. But I think when life is feeling like a lot and overwhelming, even at like a manageable level, I think it makes sense that your brain still goes to that space.
Totally. I think sometimes we can, right? Like our brain forms these pathways, these like normal ways of thinking a lot of times.
Yeah.
And I think if you are someone who has experienced I'm also making this up, so maybe this is wrong, but my working theory about myself, I guess, is like if you've experienced like more intense suicidal thoughts, I think you do sometimes have more of a pathway of kind of just like passive suicidality being in your background, like that it is just something your brain is used to kind of going to as like a coping skill, sort of. It doesn't mean you're going to actually do it, but I think some of us, like we do know that the more you interact with a certain thought in your brain, the more your brain registers it as this is an important thought and notices it more.
Well, and it's just, it's familiar.
Yes. And I do think thinking about it as background noise is helpful. Like there are a lot of people who do live with like the background noise of like anxiety, right? Just like feeling anxious about a lot of different things, or people live with the background noise of an eating disorder and just kind of having these like eaty thoughts about food or their body, or people live with OCD is one of the biggest ones of people sort of live with background noise about certain thoughts. I do think that that is a helpful way to think about it. And the less you interact with it and give it space and obsess over it, sort of like the less you kind of pick a wound, the easier it is, rather than fighting it, to try to focus on what the person said, which is exactly what I would say to them, is focusing on what is important to you in your life. What do you care about? What do you value, and kind of turn towards that instead of trying to eradicate or stop these suicidal thoughts.
Yeah. And I think really what we're explaining here is the concept of mindfulness.
Yeah.
Very, very simply, right? But the idea that you can coexist with your thoughts, that we can have thoughts that we don't interact with. Just as you were saying, like we allow them to exist, we allow them to be there, but we understand that we don't have to cling on to them and do something with them. I would add, with all of that said, I think to this person's question, right, pay attention to, is it just constant chatter, or are there certain situations where it feels like it's louder? Are there certain situations that feel that they trigger those thoughts and bring that to the surface? Or is it just a constant thing? Because then that gives you even more data to know, like, okay, these are certain situations that I have to figure out how to maybe manage my stress a little bit better knowing that this comes up, or if it is just feeling like a constant state of being, then that helps you like apply more of this mindfulness concept of being more tolerant and accepting of the fact that the thoughts are there, mm-hmm. while knowing that we don't have to give them life.
Totally. Okay. Hi, Amanda and Sam. Big fan of the podcast. My mom died by suicide when I was young, and our family never talked about it. It felt like it was this huge secret. And now I have kids of my own, and I'm stuck on how to tell them about their grandmother. They've started to ask questions, and I don't want to lie, but I also don't want to traumatize them or make them afraid. Do you have any advice on handling this? It feels like such a heavy thing to dump on children. Well, Sam, you're the right person to answer this question, because you have had to deliver a lot of difficult news.
I have.
To kids, probably.
To kids, to humans in general. I think the first thing that I lead with is kids are much smarter and much more perceptive than people give them credit for. And part of what creates complicated coping is when kids feel that they can acknowledge something has gone wrong and they can acknowledge that something has happened, but mm-hmm. none of the adults that they trust around them are confirming that to them.
Yeah.
So obviously there are age-appropriate ways with which to explain something that's happened. Mm-hmm. However, when you are talking about delivering information to kids specifically, it is very important to use clear, cogent language.
Okay.
So for example, a lot of people will say like, Grandpa has passed away.
Yeah.
Or Grandpa has gone to the angels.
Yeah.
Or Grandma isn't here anymore. Mm-hmm. That is confusing for kids because it, as they get older, like maybe teenagers would be able to kind of piece together what's happened.
Right.
But it still doesn't, there's a temporary element to that.
Mm.
And for kids specifically, death is permanent.
Right.
And they need to know that this is a permanent thing. So what I would always recommend to people, if they, you know, if at the hospital, if we told someone that their family member died and they would be like, well, how do we tell the kids?
Mm-hmm.
I would always say, you start very direct and you say, you know, heaven forbid, like dad has died or mom died. And then you can tack on the end the explanation for that based on your belief system, what you think, you know, you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to operate from what you believe happens after we die. But that initial point is very important to drive home to kids that this is a factual thing that has happened, and confirming to them that they are going to be included up to an age appropriate way in this process, and what that looks like. Because I think people try to exclude kids thinking that they're saving them, but you're not. And it's the same thing with like family history, right? Yeah. Like if you feel that there's this big secret and they ask questions of like, oh, what happened to so-and-so? And you kind of like hum and ha, they piece together in their brain what they think happened.
Yeah.
And that's where you can kind of trip up on them not fully understanding something, but in their effort to understand it, they start to get it confused and mixed up and kind of have like incorrect beliefs around what's going on.
So for this person, right, who – and I guess it depends on the age of the kids, because I was like researching the other day because my daughter is two. And when we watch TV shows – or not TV shows, movies – like she's really into The Lion King right now, and maybe I like shouldn't have showed her The Lion King, but you know, anything to avoid Miss Rachel these days. So love you, Miss Rachel, but you're also
we need a break.
Right? Like what? I don't, and I had to Google like, what am I supposed to like? Cause she's so like
perceptive.
And she's like, what happened? What happened? What happened? That's what she says about everything. Or if someone like isn't on the screen, she'll be like, where did they go? Where did they go? And there's a very, you know, scene where Mufasa is dead and Simba is like crying and she's like, what happened? And I didn't know what to say. And I do know, according to Google, that if you say like, you don't say like they passed away or they went to sleep or things like that, because then kids are going to think like they could die by going to sleep.
Exactly. And you have to say, like, I think this is what's hard, is part of why some of these topics are so intimidating, especially if we're talking about like suicidality and death and grief and all that. When we're talking about kids and having those conversations, really what we're projecting onto the kids is our discomfort with those topics and our insecurities around communicating those things or understanding those things or feeling overwhelmed by those things. And so I think we forget with little kids, they move on so quick. Mm-hmm. You could be like, oh, he died.
Yeah.
And she'd be like, what? And then, you know, he would be like, yeah, he died and he went to heaven or, you know, whatever. You want to like wrap that in and she'll
he went to lie in heaven.
He went to lie in heaven. Yeah. And she'll be like, okay. And then she'll, you know, move on. But I think people panic about the idea of like introducing their kids to these things. But it's like, look, it happens. Yeah. And part of what trips kids up is when they can tell that there's something that's making us upset and something they don't understand.
Yeah.
And so if we're talking about like an immediate death, if heaven forbid it is the result of, you know, somebody dying by suicide, kids need to understand why you're upset.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to say you have your moment where you as an adult collect yourself and and figure out how to be as collected as you can, conveying that information or having a trusted person with you while you do that. And you say clearly, like, you know, so-and-so died and so-and-so, you know, depending on their age, you can decide how much detail you want to give.
Okay, so if you're listening to this episode and feeling like, oh my gosh, I could actually really use a therapist, we've got you. My practice, Therapy for Women Center, has therapists licensed in 43 states across the country. All the therapists are hired by me, trained by me, handpicked by me, and we really back and support our therapists. We vouch for them, unlike some of these big online therapy platforms. Also, if you're local to the Philadelphia area, we have 3 office locations there. So I would love for you to go to our website, therapyforwomencenter.com, and check it out. Have you ever had someone die by suicide that you had to tell, like, a parent of a who had younger kids or anything? Like, how do you know? And maybe it's, like, individual per, you know, my daughter's 2, so I don't have a super great idea of how much more complex like a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old or an 8-year-old is. But because of that suicide piece, when do you tell a child that it was by suicide?
So there's a point where details can become gratuitous.
Yeah.
And I think this isn't just with suicide. I think this is with like death in general. You get to decide the amount of detail that you want to go into. And also, I will say, if we had a patient come in, and I think this was for anything that would be considered like a graphic trauma, right? Yeah. Whether this was gunshot wounds, some type of an injury, some type of an accident, things happen to the human body that are really gnarly.
Yeah.
And so what I would do is I would prep adults.
Yeah.
I would tell adults a little bit about what they were going to see. And I would ask them, like, how do you feel about it? And they would be like, no, I want to see it. And I would be like, okay. And then I would, if people were like, no, I don't want to see them, let's say like the patient had died, I would tell them it is actually helpful for you to see that this is real.
Yeah.
Because it's really quite a mind fuck when you got up that morning, someone you loved was alive.
Yeah.
Later that day, you go to the hospital, you find out they're dead. Then you go home and you never see them.
Yeah.
Like, that is very confusing for kids and adults alike. A lot of times we would receive patients that had attempted suicide and they were not going to make it, but they were still receiving like chest compressions or we had them on a ventilator or, you know, kind of we were trying to keep them alive.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. And most of that would be because there was, in fact, a pulse or we were trying to regain a pulse. And there is actually data that shows, as difficult as it is to watch, families that witnessed everything being done during a code coped better with the loss than the family members that never saw that happen at all. So
interesting.
Family members who see that happen and can piece together that everybody did everything they could to right. help this person live.
Right.
Those were the ones that fared better in the long run than people that weren't afforded that opportunity. And sometimes you just can't. Like, we would have right. people that would come in via EMS and family was following from behind and they lost pulse in the ambulance, and then they get in and we try and they don't respond to anything, and that's it, you know? But the suicidality cases were really difficult because a lot of times there were situations where families had, they knew the person went missing mm-hmm. or they received the text messages of the goodbyes and the, I'm leaving you this, and, you know, or some of them saying like, I am going to do this. And sometimes family members would find them already. Yeah. And so I think to circle all the way back to this idea of like, how do you break this news? You have to be as clear as you can mm-hmm. because people deserve the truth about their loved ones. People need to know that they are going to be supported in the grief. And I yeah. think for kids, one of the most important things is for them to know that they have not been abandoned, mm-hmm. that they are not going to be left alone through this process. To talk to them about what is going on and follow up after the fact and say, we're going to the funeral home to make choices. We're going to choose this. We're going to do that, because that helps them make sense of this impossible mm-hmm. situation. And again, if you're talking about something that's happened in the past, it's the same thing. You don't have to go into the gory nitty-gritty details. You can say, you know, grandpa did something that caused him to end his life and yeah. he died as a result. And
yeah.
he really struggled with feeling really sad,
yeah.
you know, and
yeah.
use it as a teaching moment to right. be able to say like, I want you to come to me if you yeah. feel this way, right?
Yeah.
I want you to talk to me, like allowing that channel to be open and using it as a learning and a teaching moment, as opposed to like this big, dark, scary family secret.
Yeah.
That nobody knows what to do with.
And I think the listener clearly, like, she was impacted by yeah. the secrecy too. So yes. I think as hard as it is modeling, talking about it, yeah, I think people get very caught up when doing things of trying to say the right thing. And a lot of times it's really about being honest, and you can be honest about not knowing
yeah.
what to say or struggling yourself.
Yeah.
Well, we hope you got something out of this episode, this FAQ episode. We have a lot of other exciting episodes coming up in the queue. And as always, send us your questions.
Yeah. And as per usual, you know the drill. Anything you can do to rate, review, share, subscribe means the world to us. If this episode resonated with you and you feel like it would be helpful for somebody else, send it over to a friend. Anything we can do to get the word out about the pod is super helpful. So we appreciate you.
All right. And if you want to have a full breakdown of this episode, we're going to have a whole episode guide mm-hmm. with a lot more stuff on Substack. So you can yeah. check us out at nuanceneeded.substack.com. Bye, everyone.
Bye.